Gifts from a Feral Cat, A Story of Love, Loss, and Miracles by Tion Wilson. Chapter 1, Enchanted. There are only two ways to live your life. One is as though nothing is a miracle. The other is as though everything is a miracle. By Albert Einstein. In a world where proof is required to believe, I experienced the unbelievable. My life had been built on logic, simple cause and effect. It was explainable, it made sense, and what didn't make sense was given a cursory nod and set to the side. But as time moved along its silken stream, I discovered that some experiences have no explanation. They simply occur. Without research to back up the observation, a published paper to validate the event, or authorities to give it their blessing. That leaves me, if I can relinquish the need to prove everything, with a deep sense of wonder and mystery, and looking at the world as a mystery is both humbling and disconcerting. This is such a story, magical and incomprehensible. It is a true story, even though names were changed, as were characters, conversations, and timelines. But the essential story and location are accurate. Most importantly, the cats were real. They lived. And their story is true. This is a teaching story. I was the student, and the cats and their ancient feline wisdom were the teachers. Their lives stimulated conversations with others who then added their own wisdom to this living classroom. My elderly neighbors, Gus and Emma. My tall, soft-spoken Navajo friend, Jake. And the spry Doc Parsons, the most perceptive person I've ever known. At the heart of what I'm about to tell you are unexplainable events that challenged my understanding of life. Inadvertently, they also deepened my connection to something infinite. There are many words that describe what I experienced, magical, inconceivable, mystical, but the best word I have found is miraculous. A miracle is defined as, quote, a surprising and welcome event that is not explicable by natural or scientific laws, unquote. My experiences fit the definition. They could not be explained by anyone. This is the story of a series of extraordinary events from 1986 through 1990 that reawakened a long dormant sense of precious amazement I had lost many years before. When I was a child, I was open to life, connected to the living things, and a creator that spread its banquet before me, beautifully laid out in sights, sounds, tastes, sensations, and feelings. I was comfortable not knowing and not understanding, because my silent partner was ever present to guide me in the exploration of the world. Without question, I knew I was loved by more than people. My mother said I lived in a state of perpetual wonder, wide-eyed and open-mouthed in an expression of endless surprise. The world took my breath away, whether a jeweled butterfly emerged from its dry husk, a cut finger healed without a trace, or trees mysteriously changed their color overnight. Everything was magical. Everything was wonderment. As I grew older, a kind of amnesia began to set in. I forgot that my mother's cool hand healed a fever, or that lightning bugs awoke at twilight to dance to a drumbeat only they could hear. I forgot how extraordinary life was. Little bit, I simply forgot my connection to the world around me. At home and school, growing up meant to be responsible. Growing up's job was to collect information, remember it, be smart, adept and capable. These traits had far greater value than admitting, "I don't know. I'm amazed. I don't understand." There was no reward for not knowing. Answers were important, not questions. So I crammed myself full of information to avoid the embarrassment of poor grades, or not being able to answer, not being able to explain, and not looking competent. My continuous childhood prayer of gratitude devolved into, "Whatever the cost, dear God, don't let me look ignorant." As I struggled to fit into new groups, new responsibilities, new attitudes, the world lost its sheen and the amnesia deepened. I entered the world of adulthood following the siren song that beckoned me to grow up, fit in, and don't stand out unless you know more, not less. I was lost. Amnesia complete. It was in this state of amnesia that I got married in the early 80s. By 1985, my husband and the knowledgeable adult I had become moved from the Midwest to Texas for a fresh start. Like many before us, we thought a change of scenery, a new job, new home, and new people would help us get back to normal and fix our differences. And, like all who came before us with the same illusion, it worked for a while. Until it didn't. What I did learn along the way was that when life wasn't working, it let me know in its loudest outdoor voice. In one painful year, I lost my husband, my job, my home, and my adult understanding of how life worked. He wanted to stay. I wanted to run away. So I packed everything in a U-Haul and moved less than a year after I arrived. I was lucky. When our assets were split, I had enough to allow me the time I needed to figure out the next chapter in my life, to remember how to take deep breaths. Though I'd lived in many areas of the country, I had never felt fully at home anyplace, possibly because I had never felt fully at home inside myself. But when I arrived in New Mexico, aptly called the Land of Enchantment, it was like a dose of smelling salts for an unconscious life. I began to wake up and remember a time when I was connected to the mystery and beauty around me. I fell in love like a child, accepting everything and finding fault with nothing. I was drawn in not just by the people, but the explosion of new colors, sights, sounds, smells, and tastes. The vast open spaces soothed my soul. The mountains felt like gentle arms encircling me. I was thoroughly and completely charmed, and the amnesia began to lift. Immersed in an unfolding history, I met those who were part of this melting pot. The Pueblo Indians, the Navajo or Diné, which means the people, the Apache tribes, the Mexican and Spanish people. I felt a surprising connection to la gente de la tierra, the people of the land. Alongside their ancient cultures, almost every ethnic background was represented, including Huibiligana, the Navajo word for Caucasians. I was delighted by the sheer variety of color that permeated the landscape. During balloon fiesta, hundreds of vibrant hot air balloons floated in the pre-dawn skies like fat, blinking Christmas lights. The wildly colorful spinning fiesta skirts flounced with the texture of multi-layered cotton candy during celebrations. Pottery, sand paintings, blankets, and jewelry seemed to glow, rich in colors of the land. Sunsets gleamed in layers of burnished copper, cottony pink, and deep gray, as the Sandia Mountains were lit by a surreal watermelon color. Not since childhood had my mouth hung open and my eyes become huge in that long-forgotten expression of endless surprise. I drank it in, soft rose, bruised purple, and every shade of umber, gold, ochre, and silver. These colors intertwined with the startling green of firs, sage, and bunch grass against the lofty, gentle mountains, that didn't just feed my eyes, it fed my spirit. The weather was perfect, low humidity with cool nights and warm days. I lived in the high desert area of Albuquerque, miles from the lower Rio Grande. Doors and windows were flung open in the evenings as we thumbed our noses at mosquitoes that avoided the dry air. Winters were gentle, an inch of snow causing the city to pause until the sun forced the powdery white fluff into happy puddles. New fragrances surrounded me from season to season. During late summer and early fall, the smoky sweet perfume of roasting chiles commingled with the musty fragrance of cottonwood leaves as I walked by the river. In winter, night winds brought the pungent, piney scents of mesquite wood and piñon smoke. Spring and summer offered the indescribable smell of creosote that permeated the air after a heavy rain. And year-round, the yeasty aroma of dense, round loaves of bread from outdoor horno ovens made my mouth water. The perfume of food, flowers, trees, and land filled me. The earth was generous, giving freely of sand, silt, and clay to form adobe, the backbone of Southwest buildings. Structures felt organic, as if they grew from the earth to blend with the landscape. Rough textured interior and exterior walls were peppered with beautiful flaws, slight bulges, and faint dips. I walked through countless neighborhoods, marveling at the architecture. Some homes were surrounded by latia fences made of unstripped saplings placed vertically, like uneven soldiers frozen at attention. Other homes had adobe garden walls that formed an irregular barrier, delighting the eye in its fluid solidity. In the emergence of my fourth decade, I learned imperfection was beautiful. When invited into my friends' homes, I was surprised by Talavera sinks and tiles in dazzling ochre, cobalt, yellow, and green. These decorated tiles became counters, shelves, and stairs that integrated into every room of a home. Above me, ceilings had great vigas, beams made of tree trunks scraped bare of bark and used as visible support or decoration. Sometimes hand-scraped latias were laid between the vigas to form intricate chevron patterns on ceilings. I was lifted by the natural beauty. Some interiors also had indoor fireplaces, called kivas, that pushed out into rooms like a pregnant woman's belly. Everything felt soft, round, and feminine. Doorways were arched like beautiful eyebrows. Even floors of saltillo tiles were made of good red clay that began its life soft and malleable inside Mother Earth. I thought of it then, as I do now, as a gentle architecture. For the first 3 years, my two cats, Deidre and Cushon, sometimes called Cush, and I lived in a cramped and noisy one-bedroom apartment near a street that never slept. In 1989, after 3 years of apartment living, I began to feel overwhelmed by the transience of people, the thin walls, and the constant street noise. I found myself driving to Cibola National Forest or Bandelier or any area away from people. Driving back to Albuquerque, I would already be missing the open spaces and the hushed solitude. So I decided to look for something a little bigger and a lot quieter. My girlfriend Maureen invited me to her home located south of the city. Any invitation to get out of the cramped apartment was met with open arms. Veering off onto I-25 South and then 47, I followed the two-lane road past the Isleta Reservation into the sleepy village of Bosque Farms. The downtown was 2 miles of feed store, bank, laundromat, small restaurants, a gas station, and other necessities of rural life. She had a lovely little home, a young son, and one sheep named Scrappy, what she called her $90 lawnmower investment for the weeds in the sprawling yard. After hours of talking and coffee, we took a walk through her neighborhood. Our tennis shoes crunched on the gravel. I heard a few birds, some children laughing, and a car starting in the distance. The lack of noise was jarring. I turned to her, almost whispering, "It's so quiet." "Why do you think I moved here?" she grinned. "We have everything we want and nothing we don't. It's a great place to raise my boy. We can take peaceful year-round walks along the ditch banks, and even in town there's no heavy traffic." She waved her hand toward the surrounding homes. "My neighbors are salt of the earth. This is a community of sheer goodness. And we have Bennies." "What's Bennies?" I asked. "Some of the most delicious Mexican food in the Southwest, smothered in the best green chili sauce I've ever had. I could bathe in it." We both laughed and decided we'd eat there before I headed back. Bennies Mexican Kitchen, established in 1972, was everything she said and more. The people were welcoming, the service fast, helpings were generous, and the prices were fair. We both savored enchiladas smothered in homemade green chili sauce. My taste buds stood at attention in celebration status. As we talked, I told her I'd decided to move to someplace quieter. Dabbing her mouth with a paper napkin, she asked, "If you want some peace and quiet, have you thought about moving here? You're 20 minutes from Albuquerque if you want to go to the symphony or visit friends. You know my sister and her husband live down here, right?" I nodded. "Well, they've outgrown their house and just bought a bigger one. They're renovating their small one for a rental." The seed was planted. That October, the cats and I moved to the farming community of Bosque Farms. My dream of living in a true adobe home was fulfilled when I rented her sister's beautifully restored two-bedroom house in the heart of the Rio Grande Basin. It had a double lot with a big yard and was set off by itself at the end of a short dead-end street. It had farmland on all sides except one, where my new neighbors Gus and Emma lived. It was an old, settled neighborhood, occupied by the same 10 families that had lived there for over 20 years. I was surrounded by hushed beauty, mountains, open fields, and irrigation canals called acequias. I was serenaded by the whisper of wind in cottonwood trees, distant coyote calls, and morning bird song. It was heaven, especially after living in a noisy apartment complex. Though less than 20 minutes from Albuquerque, it felt like I'd moved 100 miles away. Instead of gazing out at the Sandia Mountains, I gazed at the Manzano Mountains to the east. I moved from Bernalillo County to Valencia County, and the change was profound. This small rural village of about 3,500 people sat in the flatlands between the meandering Rio Grande on the west and the upward sloping plain toward the Manzanos in the east. The river made large swaths of land nutrient-rich and verdant. It was a riparian habitat in this arid state, a welcome wetland that provided a perfect environment for water-seeking plants and wildlife. Near the river and acequias, the soil was a natural home for alfalfa, beans, corn, chiles, and a multitude of grasses. Instead of kids on skateboards, I watched horses, sheep, and fat cows grazing in fields. It was a place that reminded you to slow down. It was a good place for miracles. So how does one share something that makes no sense in our world? As I recall the events during that time of my life, they feel almost impossible to describe. But please join me and read the story of one strange and magical cat that changed my life forever.